Creepy Unsolved Media。
Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. If you have an encounter you would like to share with me, send me an email at midnight_in_the_mountains@yahoo.com. Follow me on Instagram at midnight_in_the_mountains. With all of that out of the way, we will get into tonight's episode. I've invited Cisco Murdoch and Steve Stockton on. They're truly some of my favorite storytellers and have had lifelong experiences with the paranormal. Hey Steve, hey Cisco. So now the first time I ever heard of the two of you was when I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, Into the Fray with Shannon LeGros. She has you guys on for her Halloween specials every year, and you just have the best chemistry and dynamic together, and you are two of the best storytellers I've ever heard. I just love you guys, and I'm so thankful that you came to join me for an episode of my show. Steve, would you like to start us off tonight and tell us how your paranormal experiences started?
Oh, well, those shows with Shannon, we just did year six of that. She has us every year.
Yeah.
I got into paranormal just at a young age. I had had a few experiences when I was around three or four, but the big one was I was somewhere between five and six. I saw a full-bodied apparition out in the road in front of the house. And it didn't scare me as much as it just piqued my interest and my curiosity. Like, huh, what was that? It was a ghost, or I assume it was a ghost. It might have been a time slip or a glitch or a portal or who knows what. But I saw a little boy run out from behind a car that had stopped at the intersection there, ran in front of the car. And I could tell, as I was looking at the driver, I was afraid he was going to run over him. But the driver didn't see what it was. Well, the kid runs catty corner from the intersection down into our yard and got maybe 10, 15 feet. And if you've ever seen little kids that they've just barely mastered the art of walking, well, they start running and they don't know how to stop. They'll just fall down. Well, that's what this little boy did. And when he fell down, he was just gone. I mean, totally, he didn't fade out or anything, just boom, and he wasn't there anymore. And I didn't take my eyes off the spot. I walked directly to it. And I knew that yard. I rode bicycles all over that yard. We had 26 acres down there and lived. The driveway from the street to the garage door was 212 feet. I measured that later on when I was doing bicycle sprint races up and down the driveway. I was about halfway out in the yard, went straight to that spot, never took my eyes off of it. I knew there wasn't any place, a hole or anything for him to fall into. But when I went there to the spot, there was nothing there. Nothing that I could have mistaken for a kid. Like I said, no hole that a kid could fall into. I even at another time went and got a shovel and dug there to see if I'd find bones of a kid or something that went missing. But yeah, it didn't scare me. It just like, you know, I wonder what that was all about. Because even in my 5 or 6 year old mind, I knew that little kids didn't run across the road into the yard and fall down and disappear. And no idea where that came from. I think later on looking into it, I think he was attached to that car. Now, I don't know. I didn't recognize that person driving. This was a community out in the country where we pretty much knew everybody. But that road dead ended into the lake, Melton Hill Lake, which is a part of the Clinch River. And I've often wondered if that guy didn't have a body in the trunk or something like that of a kid, and he took it down and got rid of it, or that's what had happened at some point, because I didn't recognize the guy. I never saw him before or since. But that was the direction he went, where it dead ended into the lake.
And I didn't even think about that one. You know what? That's, you know, as many times as we've talked about this, I've never even thought about that one, where he very well may have.
Yeah, that just occurred to me recently. Wow. But I researched that road. The road that he was coming down was Sparks Road. That was named after my grandparents on my mother's side. They had a dairy farm on that road and had lived there for decades. And nobody knew of any small child getting killed there. There was a 12-year-old boy, my grandfather's nephew, that he accidentally backed over with a cattle truck and killed. But as far as I could find out, that was the only death that occurred on that road in modern times. And this kid was wearing modern clothes. This was, would have been about 1968 or 1969. And he was wearing clothing that was fairly appropriate for the time. Had on shorts and suspenders and little matching blue cap. Cisco, do you remember when kids used to dress
like
that?
Yes, I do. I do. Exactly, yeah.
But,
and that would have been like, you know, anywhere from the late 50s to the early 60s. Yeah, you know what I mean? And, you know, especially being in that area as well. Because you got to think about it. Like, you can look at the Waltons and the time that they were going through and what was going on Walton's Mountain, you know, just for time reference. Go into the city, it looked completely different.
Yeah.
But for the area you were in, I would say, yeah, that was probably it.
It looked like he was probably dressed for Easter or some kind of, you know, a picture day or something like that. It wasn't, it was too nice of stuff to wear to school.
Right.
But still, it was functional.
Yeah. And I always thought maybe it could have been a time slip, too. But now when you talk about the clothes and stuff like that, it wouldn't be a
And he came out from behind the car. And I could see, you know, the yards on the other sides and the road was on a hill.
Right.
So I know he wasn't in the road or running down the hill behind the car. He came out from behind the car and ran across in front of it. And that's what I've thought recently, that maybe there was a body in the trunk and that was a little kid's spirit
to the car,
trying to get away from the guy that had put him in the trunk.
Could have been.
That's horrible.
And also could have connected into your energy again. There you were as a child, putting off the kind of energy you probably were. Most kids do. And you know how, you know, we always talk about energy being attracted to the same energy or the same, even a part of a person, you know, even whether it's depression or happiness, or we've heard cases of children connecting to fathers who were missing their own children at home, like being away from home in a hotel or something, you know, and they were seeking a parent that cared.
Well, I kind of thought maybe he saw me and thought, oh, there's another kid.
Yeah.
But he wasn't running toward me.
He
was across the yard. So
that one always gets me. That one there, because you can look at it in a lot of different vantage points. And that's what, you know, you kind of, I don't want to say should do in this subject, but I think you have a better adventure if you do that, because you're looking at things in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of different vantage points. And that's what's so cool about being able to be with other like-minded people, or even people just interested. They might not be like-minded, but they're interested in the subject to give you different vantage points, because Steve has done that to my stories too and said, hey, what about this? What if, you know, the house was feeding off your father's energy and your father was feeding the house at the same time? Both can be true at the same time.
Yeah, that Red Ribbon story. I think that was, your dad was maybe subconsciously manifesting that, or giving it energy so that it could manifest.
Giving it energy for sure, because there was just too much in that house that had to do with that one soldier. And it peeled back over time slowly. You know, I guess we just tell a little piece of it anyway, since we brought it up, not leave everybody hanging. If you want me to. All right.
Yeah, well, no, I was going to say.
His early experience was a child, and my, you know, as a child, and mine also was as a young child. And the first thing I remember seeing that I can, I mean, there was other stuff, plenty. But I could always say it was a dream, or it was a nightmare, or partial nightmare, or kid's imagination, or this or that. This one I picked because it showed over time, slowly, that other people saw the same thing and had another piece to the puzzle. And it kind of unfolded over like 25 years. So when I was young, we lived in a farmhouse, and it was kind of like the Brady Bunch. Some were his, some were hers. There was, I don't know how many kids in the house at the time, let's say, because teenagers were in and out and coming and going and leaving and coming back. I mean, as far as living there. So it's kind of hard to get an accurate count, you know. But I had one brother and about seven sisters. And at one time, most of them were in a house living together at one time. So my dad was also a World War II vet. And tended to like alcohol, and he was a man's man, you know, went out, played poker and darts and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And, you know, the horses, and, you know, liked to drink. And he also had a violent way about him when he drank, and the war PTSD didn't help. He also didn't want to hear anything about nonsense. So if you had seen something in your room, you didn't come down the breakfast table and tell everybody, because he'd lose his mind. You know, so everybody kind of kept it quiet, which is why it took so long to unpeel. So I remember being on the bed And I was taking a nap, and it was my parents' room, and the bed just seemed extremely huge to me because a king-size bed, a little kid. Just kid memory. So I remember hear a crackling and a popping and kind of an electrical kind of sound, I would say now. At that time, I just heard popping and crackling, and I thought my sister's, there was always something about my mom's closet. You couldn't go in there. And that's just moms and daughters and little kids. She didn't want her dresses messed up. Nothing paranormal. I didn't mean that. I just mean stay out of my damn closet, you know? And she made it a point because women dressed back then for office jobs and work, and she was a working mom, you know?
Even to go shopping.
Yeah.
Heels, I remember my mom wearing heels, a dress, pearls, the whole Jack Yell hat, some gloves. To go to downtown Knoxville and shop on the promenade. You know?
Yep, and the hat, and by God, if it was special day, he'd wear a corsage with it. So that's just the way it was. So you stayed out of the damn closet, and that was the first thing I thought when I turned around. I thought, well, my sister's in there messing around, and I'm thinking, oh, somebody's going to get in trouble. And I'm looking, and all of a sudden, this light, the sound's getting louder and kind of growing. It seemed like it was, you know, kind of encompassing the room at one time. And the light was pushing through the slats in the shutter doors in this old farmhouse closet doors. And this light just kept getting brighter and brighter. And I'm on the edge of the bed just looking at it going, holy cow, what is it? You know, kind of sitting up and still on the bed. And it's coming at me. And as it's coming at me, I'm moving kind of away from it. And it starts to get a mass in the middle. And the mass is kind of like the sparkles and stuff are coming together. And it's making a form. And the form's a head. The head has a face. And the head and the face have a long brown ponytail. And that's all you see. And the neck just stops. Now, it wasn't cut off like gore or anything. It was just stopped there. So basically now I look back and go, the ghost could only manifest that much. It was a head. He was trying to like scream. And as it got closer, the features got sharper. His eyes opened and red light, like, emitted from there. The whole thing was light, but when he opened his eyes, there was red light with it. And he opened his jaw dropped in like a silent scream. And I think I was screaming at the same time. The screaming I heard wasn't him, it was me. And it zoomed towards me and I fell back and watched it go over me and disappear into the wall. Now, years later, nobody said anything. My sisters came in with my mom and they grabbed me up and my mom's telling me stuff like you're dreaming, wake up. And my sisters are talking at the same time and it's kind of all crazy. And I remember hearing my mom say, take her into the kitchen because I was crying and, you know, get her something. And as I'm walking by, my sister's like behind my mom and I'm screaming over and over again. Red eyes, red ribbon. Red eyes, red ribbon, because he had a red ribbon in his ponytail when he went over. And I saw it fluttering with his hair. And in my little kid mind, red eyes, red ribbon, it matched. That's all I could remember. It was kid gibberish, but I meant something. I saw something. That's all I could get out. And as my sister's taking me into the kitchen to get the cookie or the glass of water, whatever it was I was getting, my other sister said to my mother, red eyes, red ribbon, mom, just like I saw. And I hung on to that moment because in my little kid experience, that was the only time I had anything I saw validated because we didn't talk about it. And then years later, I found out that my sister saw the same guy in her room. And I tell that long, big story in there, in my book. And it was amazing to me to hear that she had seen this guy because nobody had said it. My mom never admitted it. She said we had a ghost, but she never talked about what he looked like. Later on, I found out that many people in that house had seen him. And I think that with me, I always felt like we left the man behind because my parents divorced and we left. And I never got to go back when I was old enough to do something about it. It had been demolished and turned into a development. And I almost want to walk on the doors of the development and go, hey, do you have a ghost by any chance?
Yeah, I've said that before when you've told that on shows that we've been on together, that somewhere there's a house up there that they see the red eyes and the red ribbon still, I bet you.
He was a Revolutionary War soldier. I live not far away from the Battle of Fort Monmouth. you know, the Battle of Monmouth and all the stuff that went on in the Revolutionary War. Trenton's not far. I mean, all through here was all battles and, you know, all through New Jersey and stuff. So where that farmhouse was very, not very far from Molly Pitcher's well. You know, that famous story about Molly Pitcher getting going back and forth in the well during the battle. And, you know, so, I mean, it's not unheard of. And I'm sure many people have a Revolutionary War ghost walking around here and there. But I never forgot him. And, you know, I think still that's one of the reasons I help as many soldiers as I can, ghost-wise. And the living, too. Trying to help that one guy.
Why do you think his eyes were red, though? That's
anger. I think it was pure anger. I think it was just energy. I think it was energy. I think I found out that there was a hidden room behind the servant's staircase in that farmhouse that they found later on. They found papers and things like that in there. Supposedly some letters. And again, 25 years later, I find out that my brother was told to take everything out room and throw it on the burn pile, because you always have a burn pile in the country when you're doing remodeling. Throw all the boards and stuff on there. And my dad wasn't into the history, didn't care. And my brother didn't want to tell anybody because he knew my mom was a huge history buff and would have lost her shit. So everybody kept their mouths shut. I just hate that, because
that's
if everybody
shame.
Just spoke it out and said it out in the open, like we can sort of do now. I think that's a perfect example of, you know, 30 years time lost. You can't go back, you know, and fix that. You can't fix the trauma that people went through by themselves, having, you know, waking up and seeing an angry Revolutionary War soldier standing over you in your bedroom. And here's this ghost just trying to get attention. You know, the living are as upset as he is. They're just, you know what I mean? If we could just calm the situation down and get some, you know, our bearings here, we can maybe help everybody, you know, with just some simple time and kindness and the want to understand. You know what I mean?
Isn't that the truth?
It's true.
So simple, but so difficult.
Yep.
Some.
And I think that happens a lot, don't you, Steve? I mean, in families, you know, where there's something tormenting one person, or maybe trying to break a family apart and get them to fight, because that's more energy for them to feed on, know, and also something, you know, something interesting to do. I mean, if you're a ghost and you don't know what else to do and you're just, you know, an angry cuss, you know, that's entertainment. That's like reality TV to a ghost. Let me just mess with this family and, you know, I'll just do it when she's around and he'll think she's crazy and I can't wait to see that fight, you know.
Yeah, but that's poltergeist cases, you know, it's usually manifests around most likely a female that's just entering womanhood.
Yeah, and more energy.
They've got a lot of hormonal shifts and things going on.
Yep.
But it knows that if it can devil her and drive her crazy, that she'll drive the rest of the family crazy.
Can you imagine?
You go. It's got a big hubbub and stuff going on.
Think about that farmhouse. It all out of nowhere. It just has like 6-7 teenage females moving in. A World War II extremely physical, bombastic, you know, furniture break. I'm telling you, furniture break in, you know, more than once, you know, there was a little blood cleaned off the velvet wallpaper there in that farmhouse, I can guarantee you, because people got punched in the nose a lot, you know. We'd wake up in the middle of the night and everybody, it was the funniest, well, it's not funny, and I don't mean to make, you know, family, you know, that kind of abuse and horror, toxic situation sound funny, but when you live through it, you can look back, you're in the right to laugh a little, so bear with me. Yeah. We get woke up at like 2 a.m. in the morning. Everybody's meeting in the hallway, asses and elbows, and everybody's got a weapon. Somebody's got a shoe and a hairbrush, and somebody's got a golf club and a baseball bat. And I'm like, you're talking about all these teenagers bumping into each other in the dark in the night, trying to figure out where the screaming's coming from. And you look at that as a little kid, and you're looking up and you see all that. It's kind of comical. It's in a tragic way. Because everybody's scared out of their minds, too. You know, it's like, where is it coming from? But, you know, not every time we did that, it was my dad. Sometimes it was the ghost. You know what I mean? And sometimes he was arguing and wrestling with something we couldn't see. And to look back and then just automatically blame that on him or some kind of psychosis or a drunk dilemma, it was partially paranormal, I believe. And, you know, maybe if we had known that, things wouldn't have gotten so bad with that situation. I wonder how many people go through that. Many more than we think, I believe.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
Truly, truly, many more, you know. And Steve and I were talking not too long ago. Steve's got, for those who don't know, Steve has several wonderful podcasts. You know, 13 Past Midnight is one for ghost stories and, you know, and all this, and you know, so many different things, the special guests and stuff. And you're on with Gemma Jade, too, for the campfire stories. And he's on with me on Monday nights. And we just, yeah, Fireside Chat. Monday nights with Monday Madness with me. And we do all kinds of stuff. I mean, we're all over the place. I talk to people all the time. I'm having a couple of, that specialize in reincarnation and meditation and past life regression, they think, they believe with their whole heart that they've lived 29 lives together, and they're, you know, kind of specialists working together trying to explain this whole soul group thing that we go through, you know, where we agree as a soul group to come back reincarnated. And I'm going to help you learn how, you know, unconditional love. So I'm going to be a drug addict kid and you're going to be my mom this time. You have to forgive me for everything I'm going to do to you, because it's a thing we go through as a soul to learn, I believe, too, to raise your consciousness higher, to raise your vibration higher, be a better as a soul. Once you go back, I guess you get all that DNA memory from all of those lives, and you must be a wiser being, no? If you go through multiple lives, you think, I mean, unless you're a hard learner, you know, some of them. But you know, and I don't know that much about it, but it intrigues me so, because I think, okay, what if we're just supposed to learn, like me, I'm supposed to learn from my dad. Was he here to teach us unconditional love? Were we supposed to, you know, was he here to teach us survival? Because we had to learn as kids to, you know, think about kids that had to grow up hard early, you know, but they turn out to be such doers and survivors and warriors for, you know, certain causes, even if it's their own cause, you know. Yeah. So you think about that, like, wow, did we as a soul group, have I already agreed to forgive him for that crap? Maybe so. So you tend to, you peel that emotion off of it and you start looking at it from a 40,000 foot view, and you look at the whole thing and go, wow, there was a lot going on there, you know. You know, and I think that's true, very much so with the paranormal, because if you bring up cases and talk like, you know, what happened to the Lutzes and the Amityville Horror, like, you know, say what you want about anything that happened after that fact, but what happened in that house where those people were all killed in their beds, and, you know, whether it was the combination of the sister and the brother, and then he, you know, finished her off or whatever. As a somebody who lived in the 70s and remember this, it was devil made me do it right off the top.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt that, because when you've got that amount of drugs and you've got that amount of drinking, you've got that kind of psychological abuse, which is absolutely undisputed at this point, that mm-hmm. was going on between the Lutzes and that family dynamic. I mean, he even went after Ronnie got married. I don't know if you know this, but would go and get him and say, you're not spending enough time at home. And he's got a wife that's pregnant. And he left with him because he was that scared of his dad. You know, as a grown adult, maybe I'm sure he could have done a whole lot more to get away from that than what happened that fateful night. But was there something else influencing that? Was there something else influencing his breaks? I think there was.
On the DeFeo side especially. Either, whether, like you said, if he did it by himself or he did it with conjunction with his sister mm-hmm. or somebody else, everybody was killed in their beds. Mm-hmm. A lot of them face mm-hmm. down. They mm-hmm. didn't even try to get up and get away or anything. There, mm-hmm. one of them was injured from playing football or something.
Yeah, in a wheelchair,
one of
yeah.
the boys, and probably couldn't have gotten away. But the others, there was no evidence that anybody even tried to get up. They thought at first that they had been drugged or something, mm-hmm. but the mm-hmm. autopsy and the toxicology report showed nothing in their systems. Mm-hmm. So there, right. that, to me, smacks of something almost supernatural.
Yeah.
That you could systematically walk through a house and kill people with what was it, a deer rifle, like a .30-06 yeah. or something, and not wake everybody up.
Yeah.
Especially yeah. the little kids running
high.
There's
no way.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. I picked that one because that one is so famous and people really know a little bit more about what went down there. But if you know the abuse mm-hmm. and you understand that that father was extremely Again, not disputed on this. This is not my opinion. This is you know, facts, that he was abusive to the wife and he was abusive to the son. And, you know, I don't know so much of the other small kids, but he had that presence. I am the, you know, the castle, you know, king of the castle. So I bring that up because that's very much similar to ours in a different way. He was up against some pretty strong females. He was up against, you know, but again, you know, something like that, even a human being that's passed and is a ghost, an earthbound spirit, there are a lot of nasty son of a bitches walking around.
Well, you even don't change. Times, there was a dark shape in the basement that handed him the rifle.
Yeah. I mean, you don't, you know, it doesn't have to be a demon, so to speak, or a negative entity, extra dimensional, whatever you want to say. We just deal him with, like, it could have been a human being that just pushed on that stuff, whispered in his ear at the right time, pushed on that. Mm-hmm. But it's also a known fact that if you do have any kind of abuse of children, abuse in a household, especially sexual abuse of a child that really traumatizes and tries to break the spirit of that child, it's known that that's also a prime time for oppression and possession of negative entities, and those were never human. So you see what I'm saying? It's there. All it's right, isn't it, Steve? Mm-hmm. And that's what could be, you know, like there's two different things. There's, you know, my house and that situation. And definitely all of that negativity was feeding off of each other and its fear. Yeah. And then later, I think greed and some cunning and some a lot of literary license and things like that got involved. And that's a whole different set of demons.
Jay Anson helped, you know, drum it up to make it more interesting to sell books. And then the Warrens have been famously accused as of late with playing stuff up to make it a little bit bigger, to make it more exciting.
Yeah. But, you know, as much as you say that, and you and I are both kind of probably on the same page with this, I'm just going to toss a coin and say you would, that it's no different from a carnival barker. It's no different from, you know, an MC of a traveling circus or fair. You're meant to sell the product.
Yeah, that's the whole point. If you're writing a book or making a movie about it, you want to make it as interesting as possible to get as many people to see it and talking about it as you can, even if it has to include a little literary license sometimes.
Yep. Word it this way. Sell the product. Yep.
But the initial, the core of the story is very real. Mm-hmm. Some of those instances, I met a girl in Tennessee once that had lived in the area. She was neighbors with them. She had been in the house with she played with the DeFeo kids.
Man,
And she's like the red room under the stairs. She said it was just a little storage area under there that it wasn't this big, scary place.
But I'll tell you, you and I have both seen cases that you've been down in the cellar and something that had that kind of energy could absolutely manifest it as red. You know what I mean? It's like a little bit of both. You can't definitively say nothing like this can ever happen. And then it happened exactly like this because memories change and stories change. And then you've got the carnival barkers in there and the booksellers and things like that that want to add on, just like they do in the shows where the man's standing at the sink shaving and he's got a creepy feel that somebody might be looking at him. That's all he says. But on the thing in the video, you see there's this demon breathing down his neck, and he never said that.
Spigots and blood pours out.
Yeah, he never said that.
But then later on, when he looks down, there's no blood there.
Yeah, no, so, that can happen though, Steve.
Yeah, did you imagine that or not?
That manifest.
I'll never forget years after that. Even after the Lutzes had moved out, they did an interview. I think it's on 2020 or one of those type news magazine shows. With the people that live there now, or then at that time, in the 80s or whenever that was. Right. And the lady that lived there, she said the biggest thing now that was a problem was the people that were coming up to the house and trying to get inside or driving by at night and yelling and blowing their car horns. She said, we go through pure hell just from the spectators.
Can you imagine wanting to live in a house that had that kind of...
And that was they changed, like, those iconic eyeball-looking windows and stuff.
Yeah.
And just to...
I just mean the people being killed there. That would have been enough for me. I mean, I don't...
Absolutely not.
You know, there's just no way.
Do that, because I've lived places where it was like that, and you've got energy, you've got stuff there residual or whatever. There, the house I lived in Vegas had been a mob safe house at one time. And then in the 70s, there was some kind of cult that lived there and had services in the basement. So sometimes I think one energy draws another, draws another, draws another, and it just passes on. I couldn't take a bath in the tub because it would sound like a garbage can full of something metal being dragged up and down the hallway, the wooden hallway.
Oh, shit. That's just creepy.
And I'd get out, you know, put my robe on, nothing there. But it only happened when I was taking a soak in the tub. I took a shower.
And it knew you had to sit there.
Yeah.
And you know,
I had to sit there and listen to it. So it was like, you know, I'll show him.
I wonder if it's the amount of water gave him the energy. Probably. You know, because now you say that. Plus, you know, but it's just guessing.
That's a good point.
It's just guessing, though. Or it could be that it knew he was immobile.
There was a hidden room in the basement.
Could be both.
Behind, there was a bookcase in the wall at the bottom of the stairs. That opened up. There was a concrete room about 15 foot by 15 foot square with a drain in the bottom. I mean, it's pretty obvious what went on in there if it was a mob house. And then in the other part of the basement, there was, you could tell it was set up like a church. It had like a pulpit and a vestibule and things down there. And that's where.
So they could go ask forgiveness. Meetings. No, they could go ask forgiveness for what they just did in the room with the drain.
Well, that's, I think the church part of it was from later on.
Oh, okay. Because you know that happens a lot, Steve.
Yeah, I was out checking the mail one time and I felt somebody staring at me. I turned around. There was this old man. He was probably in his 80s or something. And I'm like, can I help you? And he's like, oh, forgive me for staring. He just says, but I wonder what kind of person could live in that house.
Oh, geez.
And I'm like, excuse me? And then they'd lived on the street since the 50s.
Oh,
it'd
wow.
It'd been a mob house like back in the 30s. And where it was at in the 1930s, that would have been the middle of the desert. Because in the 30s, the only thing in Las Vegas was downtown, like on Fremont Street. The Strip didn't come up until the 40s. When the mob, Bugsy Siegel, built the Flamingo and started everything on Las Vegas Boulevard. But he said, yeah, that had been a mafia safe house back in the 30s. And then in the 70s, there was some sort of what he described as a cult that lived there. Then they held some kind of church services in the basement. So there was all kinds of stuff happening.
Wow.
There.
You know, it makes me wonder if that energy from the mafia had anything to do with the cult picking that house.
I think it did. I think that they picked up on that energy and maybe unknowingly, but like, this is the place we want. That was a big, like almost 5,000 square foot house. It was a big place and, you know, half of that was basement, so they could go down there. And I mean, there was little alcoves built in the wall. You could tell, you know, like where the candelabras had gone and little riser there, like for the, where the pulpit had been. And then there was a window inside the house that went from one room into another. I still don't know what purpose that served, but a window in an interior wall just didn't have glass in it, but a sliding window from one room to another where you could, you know, pass something between rooms or.
Wow. That's weird.
It was a creepy place, but I had a photography studio down there and I've got a video where I tell the whole story about it. It's called The Haunting in Las Vegas. And I was having a photo shoot there one time with a bunch of models, and several of the girls reported hearing like a voice whispering in their ear, and they were trying to blame each other, and like one pair of sisters said, like, we don't like working with Jilly. And I'm like, why, what'd she do? I said, well, she keeps saying snarky things under her breath, like, you're not pretty enough to be models, what are you doing here, you need to leave. And then I went and talked to Jilly, and she said, yeah, I don't know what's up with those twos. They keep saying nasty stuff just out of earshot. And it was neither one of them saying it. They were hearing it in their ear. And then I had another girl that heard it in the living room. She came tearing into the kitchen where I was doing something in high heels, and she was wearing high heels, not me.
I was about to say, what were you doing in high heels?
She came tearing in high heels and slid across the floor and knocked a stool and stuff over. And she's like, there's somebody else in the living room that's not there. She said, some man just laughed in my ear.
Oh, and, wow.
That was just, I mean, there was always something there.
Is that the one, Steve, where you were actually videotaping at the time and all of a sudden this girl got something happened like
that? Yeah, I was shooting against a brick wall down there. And it wasn't video, it was photography. I was doing a product shoot for a company that made like leather skirts and things like that. It wasn't bondage gear, it was just leather stuff. But she's standing, she's facing the camera, and then I'm just firing off shots. And she turns around, and I fired off, I think it was 3-5 frames, something like that. Well, like the first two frames, nothing. The third frame, there was 3 scratches started to form. And by the fifth or final frame, whatever it was, blood is oozing from those scratches. There was no nails, no wire, nothing in that wall. Plus, she was turned with her back facing the camera when the scratches appeared on the film. Mm-hmm. And she started freaking out. She was from Detroit and had been involved with the occult and stuff. And I'm like, you know, that's okay. We can shoot around it. She's like, no, you don't effing get it. She said, 3 scratches, 3. And I'm like, what? And she said, that's demonic. That's a mocking of the Trinity. And she got her stuff and left, and I never saw her again there. Yeah. I think I did shoot with her at the Venetian or somewhere like that on location, but she wouldn't come back in the house. I had several girls like that that left and wouldn't come back.
Ain't that something?
But she was the only one that got scratched.
Now then, imagine if somebody was living in that house, Steve, that came in that had that, like, say, PTSD and was a little prone to drink too much, maybe violent, you know, and how it would feed that house and how the house would feed off of that and back and forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just amazing.
And then another time my roommate was there by herself. She lived upstairs. And she heard what she thought was a party going on downstairs in the daytime. And she thought, well, Steve's just having a photo shoot down there, because I would do that sometimes. I mean, for these big shoots, I didn't have those at home. I'd usually get a penthouse suite somewhere, and I'd have a DJ and have food brought in and shoot maybe 10, 12 model portfolios in a night. Well, she thought I had something going on down there, so she comes stripping downstairs. And about the time she said she got almost to the bottom of the stairs, the voices stopped. She said it sounded like people talking. She could hear glasses clinking, murmuring, people laughing.
Wow.
And then at one point she said it sounded like they were singing, like some sort of there was no instruments, but some sort of singing was going on and maybe chanting. Well, she goes down there. It's dark. She goes into every room, looks, there's nobody there, and she calls me. I was out at Red Rock Canyon on location doing a shoot and had been there like since 7 o'clock. That's 7 in the morning and 7 in the evening. It's what photographers call the magic hour, when you get that really low sunlight that just makes everything golden. I'd been out there since before daylight setting up for a shoot, and I'm like, no, I haven't been there. She's like, is it okay if I come out there to where you are? She's like, I'm scared to stay here. And so I think that was some of the leftover stuff from the cult or the church or whatever met in the basement.
Wow.
Well, that and also, too, the voices the girls would hear in their ears, all the snarky comments, that's like, hey, let me give you these comments and make you fight with each other and get all pissed off and everything. Keep the energy.
And two of the girls that modeled for me, the two sisters, they were into the occult and stuff. They were from Colorado. They hadn't lived in Vegas very long. They wanted to come and hold a seance. And I led them a couple weeks after that incident happened. And we had it in the room there behind the bookcase. And they knew what they were doing. They had a circle and had a Ouija board and had a candle lit and everything. Well, we were in there, and this room was airtight. There was no air coming in there, other than maybe could have come up through that vent on the floor, but it was covered up at the time. And the candle blew out in the dark there. And you talk about feeling scared. And I just knew we were going to go over to that bookcase and it wouldn't open and we'd be trapped in there. But we did get out. But they supposedly contacted several different spirits, one of which was a mobster who had been killed in that room. But he wouldn't give any information. He said, you know, that I'm no snitch. I'm not going to tell anybody.
I'm not going to tell.
You don't need to know my name. You don't need to know who I am. But, you know, I'm going to get the son of a bitch that murdered me in this room.
Wow.
But that'd probably been, you know, 70 years ago or something at that time.
Wow. Ain't that something? Ain't that something?
So, you never know what's going on anywhere that you live. When I'm traveling, going to a hotel room, I saged the shit out of it. I propped the door open. I salt the corners. Anything in here, get out.
Get out.
I'm staying here for the next 2-3 days, whatever. This is my place, my temporary home. You're not welcome. Leave.
I just had to do that in my house not long ago. Mario brings me the phone. He says, I want you to look at this. Watch. He says, that's where Tone's going. Because we've got cameras all over the house and outside and down the driveway. I'll tell you, it's scary to think because, you know, I watch a lot of CCTV, ghosts caught on tape or, you know, unusual things caught on CCTV. And I don't want to see one of those Dobby-looking things going down my driveway like that one. Because I don't know what I'd do. See, I live right at the edge of the woods, so anything could come out of there. But anyhow, he shows me this. And in my living room, Tone leaves. There's no switches or anything for this light where my son went, and he's just completely empty living room, and the light just comes on. It's not on any timers. It's not on any kind of you thing. It's not a loose bulb. There was nothing shaking that would turn it on. And then I did something else. We both went out the front door, my son and I, then we forgot something, came back in, and the TV's on. We just walked out of the room, TV was off. And you have to hit like 3 different remotes to get this TV on because there's so much crap hooked up to it to get it to come on. Yeah. And I'm looking, where's the cats? You know, so I go back and I start looking at the videos to see what happened. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm doing this. And I'm looking back and I watch my cat in the hallway and the TV comes on. And I'm like, nope, wasn't him. So I said, fuck this. Sorry for the language, but that's exactly what
you're
I said.
You're a lot of curse. It's okay.
I start opening windows. Turn open the windows. Here we go. You know, I get the sage and I get the Palo Alto wood. I get the, you know, I get the speakers. I put on my Archangel Michael house clearing stuff, turn it on blast, and I just start going around. Out! Get out! That's it. I ain't got time for this. Because, man, and you could feel there was something, you know, and I'm like, nope. Nope. But it's, again, that just goes to show that, like, Steve does it every time, you know, and you do it in your house or whatever. It's you. It's your intent. It's your being adamant. You're not challenging. You're not anything. You're not having a discussion. Get out. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
There's no room for negotiation. You got to go. Yeah.
And it's maintenance. It's not like you do it once and it works forever. It's, you know, you have to be in front of it.
Shows up. Even watching scary stuff on YouTube or TV, that can draw stuff into your house. I've had that happen before.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, too. I had this one story where, just to go with the sage thing, where this guy was having problems. His kid was seeing stuff in the room all the time, and people were seeing stuff throughout the house, whatever. They come over, and the guy sage does exactly what I did, but they went into do it and tried to get agreement for the people in the household. You have to have agreement with the people in the household, you know, to make it strong, you know. So anyway, they did it. And then the next day he calls him up and he says, well, it didn't work. He goes, what do you mean it didn't work? He goes, he's outside looking in the window. I said, well, it worked. You know, he's outside, you know, looking in. Just go to your yard now. Keep it going, you know.
Yeah.
But it does, people forget about that. You do your house and it's waiting in your car or, you know, I mean, just, I'm not saying it is, but it can be, you know, little things like that. Like, you know, something could have followed Steve or attached onto Steve or,
yeah,
you know,
or something
people
that you bring in.
Yeah.
Can have
yeah. You know, paranormal
especially
groups could go in the house.
Items.
Yeah. And the EVP that they're picking up in the house could be a ghost they brought with them. So there's so many question marks you can throw up. You can't prove that. That's another pet peeve of mine, I guess. I guess you call it a pet peeve. When I'm watching a show and they go in and automatically, you know, they've got some story about the little girl who died in the house from cholera or something. And it must be her. And every sound they get, they attribute to this story. And they don't even know who they're talking to. And then if you are communicating and talking, like Steve said, with this man through the via the Ouija board and some other things, it took a long time to get that kind of information out of the guy. He wasn't going to be a snitch and all that other. Well, how do you know they're even telling you the truth?
Yeah.
You see?
Oh, exactly.
So you got to have a little bit more, you know, because, you know, they could also be standing right there, like with their arms folded, just watching you do it. Go, I'm not talking to him. Don't talk
or
to him.
Could have heard other conversations that I've had, picked up what I'd heard about the history of the house.
Yep.
And then spun their own tale to make me believe that that's what it was.
Any and all of these things could be true at the same
can't
time.
Can't be trusted. But I've come to the realization just recently because I thought just about every place I've ever lived was haunted to some degree. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was the houses so much. It was my picking up on it. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with I'm the one that's haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Because another place I lived out here in Portland, there were words bubbling up under the paint mm-hmm. in the bathroom. Something was writing on the walls in there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vulgar
and
words.
And you wonder why.
And stuff about pain and things like that.
Mm.
And, I mean, my daughter and I would have noticed that right away. We're just mm-hmm. the type that, you know, and we both talked about that. If there had been writing on the walls when we first moved in here, mm-hmm. bubbling up through the paint, mm-hmm. we would have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But there it was. And I just, you know, there was some weird stuff going on there. So mm-hmm. probably something after me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't follow me around.
I think all of that can be true at the same time, though. You can be haunted or have ghosts that, you know, pick up on you, you know, throughout your life, like Cool Breeze picked up, with, you know, on you.
Yeah.
And something in your energy, you don't know where or how or in the ether or whatever, you know. If you think about it as possibly in Steve's case, this entity came, well, earthbound spirit, so it's a ghost, came to him via a dream. He doesn't know how he attached to him into his energy. You know, so.
The only thing I can think of, he rode a Harley or some kind of motorcycle, mm-hmm. and I had ridden one years ago.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you picked him, maybe he was hanging around a, you know, it could have been a motorcycle show you went to, or it could have been anything, who knows.
Yeah.
But it's also could very well be that they're almost walking around in some cases, like a darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe their own visuals, like they see things like Yanni at the Toys R Us. He saw a lake and a barn, but it was actually a Toys R Us now, no longer a lake or in a barn at a countryside where he worked and died. But he seemed to see it as that.
Yeah. And I think that's what some of this is, the whatever's there. When I move in, they're like, hey, this guy can, you know, we can get through to him. He can hear us.
Yeah.
He can see us. To some degree, let's put on a show. Let's get some attention.
Yeah.
I want to talk to somebody. It's been bored here. I've been bored here. So I'm going to write dirty words on the bathroom wall, you know, and make it come up under the paint.
Yeah.
So,
and you wonder why that, you know, how is that ghost communicating via writing, you know, in the paint on the wall? And say our friend who had the house where the spirits were writing on the wall with the burnt buffalo bone paint. That proven through tests that it's something used by Native Americans to decorate pottery and such, right, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
So that ghost is doing that because it knew how to work with that, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and some bang on the wall and some open cabinet doors and sling silverware.
It's always little things like that. I mean, there's not any real big manifestations. Yeah. I've had doors shut, toilets flush, sink that would turn on by itself. Things mm-hmm. like that. You know, nothing real big and major. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I think that's just they're limited as to what they can do. And I think they want to do things that'll get your attention. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, if something gets moved around in here, I'm probably not even going to notice.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hear the water in the sink come on, you know, during the middle of the night, I'm going to hear that and go shut it off.
And somehow they've learned how to use their abilities to do that. There's a good show on right now for any of your listeners that haven't seen it. I personally saw the BBC version a couple of years ago. It's called Ghosts. And I thought nothing was going to top that. But you know what? The America, through the miracle of TV, bought the rights to it and redid it as an Americanized version. And you know what? They do a pretty good job. And there's about seven different ghosts.
With Patrick McNee originally.
Could be. Could be.
British
I'm not real sure. I don't know any of the stars in either version, to tell you the truth. They're all like new people to me.
Okay.
But it's really good the way they predict. Each one can do something. Like one can move stuff, mm-hmm. like maybe even a keyboard, but it takes them so much to just hit one letter, you know, where another one can actually, when they move through you, they leave a scent, so they're definitely known, you know. And each one does something a little different. One can maybe manipulate electricity, but again, it takes so much effort and energy. And I think they're really predicting, you know, putting it on film realistically from what I've seen, and you just wonder, a whole house full of, you know, of ghosts like that. And I'm sure you have the ones that, you know, hang in the back of the closet or the basement that doesn't want anything to do with the living or the dead there. I've been in basements where there was, at this one time in Gettysburg, we went to help out this family that was there on the, you know, they were on a portion of the battlefield, all of its battlefield. But they're on the other side of a cornfield, and they were having experiences. And we went down in the basement, and from what we got, I don't know what the equipment is, but the one that shows the stick figures, you could actually count them. You could actually count them. And I forget, Fleer, maybe?
Dave from KSPS was, when I was at the Hoover House for Halloween, he was showing me footage from the stick figures. I don't even remember, but I know exactly what you're talking about, though.
It's amazing. Isn't it amazing?
It's very cool.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you could count them, you know, and there was mediums there, and you know, me being there, we're all trying to pick up. I'm getting so many different energies coming from different directions. There was like 13 that were there, I think it was. And two of them were unaware anybody else was there after talking to them. So you can have that many in a cellar and still have two that don't even know the others are there. So what are they, what's their perception? And, you know, when people, you know, look into this subject, and again, I'm just spitballing here, but it seems to be at this point that they want to understand, well, a ghost can do this, a ghost can do that, or a ghost can't do that because the one I had didn't do that. They're all different. Think of all the different people that, you know, everybody's has similarities, yet they're different, aren't they? You know,
right, that's the way ghosts are.
Yeah, that's the way ghosts seem to be, especially earthbound ones. Now, once they cross over and they get to be what I call spirits, there's some change there. You know, how much of it or how you get that way, I can't begin to tell you, but there seems to be a change, a difference, a knowing, an evolution of some kind where, you know, they no longer have the earthly burdens like a limp or pain or, you know, and they've had to come to grips with some things that they've done or, you know, like they're asking for forgiveness or forgiving you or, you know, trying to let go of some of that stuff, you know, making sure that that you understand that they love you and that they're fine and you're doing fine and they're watching and, you know, enjoy life and keep going. You know, that's kind of be the general senses of the thing. But when they're here and they're earthbound, they don't change because their personality doesn't change because they're dead. And then you have the circumstances in which they died, which definitely has an effect, wouldn't you say, Steve, of how they died, you know, whether it was, you know, traumatic or sudden or long lingering or, you know, a painful whatever, or why are they staying? Because, you know, they want to say they're sorry or please forgive me before I go, or, you know, or just they're angry you're in their house because they see their house. You know, what are you doing in it? Kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
And it might not be all the time. Their perception's different than ours, so it might be to what seems like them, like almost like in the others. Spoiler alert: in that, you saw it from the ghost's perspective. They might even see it like every, you know, 5 minutes out of their month, whatever their month is. You know, they might just glimmer you like you glimmer them.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe. Look at you and Steve, and some, like Steve has seen ghosts, but I've never seen a ghost. You know,
I've seen them.
Just because, like, you guys, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well,
but
it's like, it doesn't mean that you don't disbelieve in them either, because you haven't seen them, but, you know, you've probably felt them. You've probably seen evidence of them.
Definitely felt them. Mm-hmm.
I've felt and smelled more than I've ever seen.
Don't take that out of contents.
Yeah, I mean, like, phantom smells, you know, like I've smelled perfume, like old lady perfume.
Yeah.
Smoke, some of the pipe smoke.
Things roses, like that. Cigarettes.
That wasn't there. One house I lived in out here that was built in the 1800s, I would hear what sounded like somebody drop a handful of change on the floor. Mm. And it was original fur flooring. that was in this place. And you can hear the coins rolling and stuff, but never saw anything.
How wild.
Yeah.
How wild is that?
And that was the same one where some mornings I would wake up and smell like somebody baking something. Mm. Nothing there. Or I would smell like cherry pipe tobacco. Mm. Nothing. Or I'd smell like an old person's perfume, like White Shoulders or some mm-hmm. of that stuff. Nothing there. But that house, it had more smells and sounds. I never saw anything there that visually appeared. It was all auditory and olfactory.
Something, huh? It's an interesting subject. It really is. I mean, I can sit here and, you know, name off stories and things. I mean, I know that you're doing this close to holiday, and Steve has got some of the best holiday ghosts, you know, some of the things that happened to him. I think they're very nostalgic and just really kind of vintage. I like it a lot. But mine just happened recently. It was just a couple Christmases ago, and I'll be happy to tell your listeners, because the big thing for me in my show when I do a journey through the gate is enjoy the journey. We're here to enjoy this journey, whether you believe in reincarnation or you get one shot and done or whatever your beliefs are, enjoy it, because even the bad stuff, you can't really enjoy it, but you can look at it later and go, did I learn something from that? Did it change my course in life? Did it make me meet somebody that changed my course in life? You know, something happened. I learned something I can use later. Okay. And, you know, something I can use later. So this one I wanted to tell because it not only shows the depth of how deep the love goes, it not only shows you how much your loved ones are around you when you are thinking of them, when you connect into their energy again, and you just take a moment, you know, even if it's like, you know, when you're taking a bath or in the shower or you're driving your car, and just, you know, send them happy thoughts and energy, because at that moment, I assure you, are connecting in, they will feel it. And I've got many stories of my own personal experiences that has proved that to me at this point. But this one takes the cake. It started in Halloween and it ended up in Christmas. So I was at a psychic fair, and I make jewelry, and my stuff was in this shop, and I try to hook up, you know, psychics and mediums and stuff like that with these people. They're great people. And when I was there, we decided to set up a very Victorian Christmas kind of thing with Victorian ghost stories after a seance. And we were going to do a Victorian seance. And they wanted it very respectable and with a lot of reverence and things like that. I said, fine. I know the exact person. Well, it was 24 hours, I think, before it, and that person got the flu. So what do you do when you have a sold-out Victorian seance and no medium? So the lady calls me in a panic and says, you know anybody else? And I start thinking, okay, give me a little bit of time. Yes, I do. So I start putting out calls and feelers, and I kind of let spirit guides do the rest. Like, it's out there. It's in the universe. Send me somebody. So this lady calls me. Now, when she calls me, she is talking about trying to get to, you know, what do I need? You know, how does you want this to go down? Is each person going to get a reading? What's the deal? What's the money? You know, is there going to be, you know, at least gas money? That kind of stuff. And then she stops me. And when she stopped me, she started describing something. Now, I'll go back about a week. And it's just before Christmas, really, you know, in between time. And my son had a bad car accident at the time. He had a bad brain injury, and his eyes were just trying to catch up with what he was seeing. His brain was having a hard time healing and getting everything back again. So at that point in time, you may not realize it, but most people can't play video games or watch movies. It causes seizures and stuff like that, but you can watch old black and white stuff. So we had been getting used to watching old classics, you know, every once in a while. And I was introducing him to old wonderful movies like Harvey and 12 Angry Men and Arsenic and Old Lace and some of these great old tunes, old movies and stuff, and Twilight Zones and stuff. So we're watching this movie and another one's about to come on. And in between, they put this clip And it was a beautiful Christmas clip of a movie done 1940s, I believe, with Mario Lanza. He was a fantastic, famous tenor who sang with his most beautiful voice. He was very famous in the late 40s, early 50s, and did a lot of movies as Caruso, Enrico Caruso, and all that. But he did this one beautiful movie, and in it, he sang with the all-boys choir. And it was beautiful, and it was Ave Maria. Gorgeous. And I tapped my son on the shoulder and I said, and it was like I said, we were doing something for Christmas. I can't remember what it was, making package trimmings or something. And I said, listen to this. This was your grandmother's favorite Christmas song. This is her favorite singer of all time. Let's just listen to it for her. And we both sat there and we listened to this beautiful song. If you've never heard it, do yourself a favor and listen to it. Mario Lanza, Ave Maria. So you could feel that. You could feel that nostalgic, you know, I'm a kid again at Christmas and remembering, you know, little quick Christmas flashes of memory in your mind and stuff like that. And it was great. It was a great moment. Flashback to the phone call. I'm talking to this psychic who I've never met. I only know maybe two people that she knows, and she knows zero about me. And I'm talking and she's talking about, you know, she's business, and all of a sudden she stops. She goes, wait a minute. She goes, I got to stop you. She goes, I got somebody here that wants to get a message to you. And I said, really? She says, yeah. And I don't think she's going to stop until I let her through. I said, let her through. Bring it on. Already know who it is. Already know. Because she's created that energy path. And, you know, she's come to me many a time and it was just going to be great. And I didn't want to guess because if it was somebody else, I didn't want to be disappointed either. But I kind of had a feeling. And I said, okay. And she says, hold on a minute. She goes, she describes a little bit. She says, it's a little fuzzy. She says, but she's loud. She's saying something over and over again. She goes, hold on. She goes, wait a minute. Was she religious? I said, religious? No. She's kind of like me, real spiritual. Very spiritual. Yeah, she absolutely believed, but we had our own way, you know, about it. She goes, hold on, hold on. And she goes, wait a minute, I'm getting something different. She goes, wait, wait. She says, Ave Maria. And I, she goes, was she a nun? And I said, no, honey, she wasn't a nun. And I said, but I have an idea what you're talking about. And she says, okay, she says she knows you got it. And she's smiling. And I said, love you, mama. And she she said she smiles again. And she says, her grandson. And I said, I'll tell him. Just like that, she goes, I was there. I said, I know. I know she was there. And she said, she smiled. She goes, she's so glad you understand. And she said, Merry Christmas. I said, Merry Christmas, Mom. And at that point in time, I felt this rush of warmth hit me in my center, in my center mass. And it just hit me and it went right through me. And when it hit me, my whole body like sparkled warmth. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just like, it was almost like when you get that fear of adrenaline that starts in your toes and goes right up your body. But this was different. It started in my center and went outward. And my whole body just got warm and tingly. And I just felt her go right through me. And I never said a word. And the lady on the phone said, she said she just gave you a hug. And I said, tell her I felt it. Merry Christmas.
Oh, Cisco.
Merry Christmas. So do it. Watch the movie for your loved one. Sit there, eat popcorn. If you're alone with a blanket, talk to them the whole time you're watching the movie. Do it. Hang the Christmas balls on the tree and talk about when you hung them with them. Or put the empty plate at the dinner, you know, the empty spot, empty chair at the dinner table. It's fine. Do it if that makes you feel better. But know they're there. Know they've connected into you and they hear you when you talk to them and love never dies. Plain and simple.
I knew you were going to make me cry.
But it's true. And if I didn't share that with people, you know, and then, you know, you're going to get the people who go, well, how come that doesn't happen to me? Why doesn't that happen to me? Well, I can tell you when when you're grieving, it puts you in various, and I'm never telling anybody not to grieve because everybody has to go through their thing. But something that having to push through multiple waves of grief in my lifetime, I can tell you that when you're done, you know, you don't have to stop missing them, but let that low ball of weight in the your center plex go. Let them go. Because you're going to see them again, and they see you all the time. You know, it's not like they're hanging out, but when you connect into that love energy and that thought of them and that memory of them, and you send that happy smile or a laugh their way, or, you know, tell a silly joke. It makes you both laugh, and, you know, it helps lift them, and it helps lift you. And you're doing them a favor as well, you know. So even if it's just happy thoughts and energy to your sister, your brother, your friend, your pet, you know, whatever, do it, because it lifts you both. And I guarantee you there's a lot of mediums and psychics out there that'll agree with me. You know?
Yeah, I love that, because Christmas can be really hard when you're missing people. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to remember that.
Most of mine are gone. Most of mine, you know, and I mean, a lot of animals and everything else. And I can tell you that, yes, your family members, they hang out with them. I do believe there is something to this soul group thing where, you know, you kind of gather together, your souls recognize each other, and you're in that, and you're, you know, you encourage each other and love each other through here on Earth and on the other side, too. It just seems to be that way at this point. From the information that I have. And I have, you know, a teeny, teeny piece of, you know, the vast iceberg of information out there. But that's what I'm seeing. And I think it's extremely encouraging and cool.
I don't know much about soul groups and stuff, but I do want to learn more. But the more I get into this subject and the more people I meet, you know, it just kind of lays itself all out there, and you realize that there mm-hmm. has to be these things.
Yeah. And that's too, that's, you know, like, you know, people say, well, how come you don't, like, on my show, I will, you know, we will dip our toes into the dark stuff, because I believe you got to, you know, and a lot of shamans will tell you this, I'm Native American, and it's just something I've been taught. You kind of got to, you know, not dwell in the darkness, but maybe dip your toe every once in a while, just so you can appreciate the light, you know. And I don't mean messing with bad things just to mess with them. That's not what I'm saying. But understand how evil can be, because it's out there, and how, you know, how vulnerable we can be to that. Look at my father, look at my family, look at multiple families we could talk about. I guarantee you there are people in prison that did things that they don't remember doing because they were maybe influenced or taken completely over by something with more power and bad intent.
I definitely believe that.
I have no doubt of that. Even if it was just pushing on their normal, you know, their cracks. You see what I'm saying? If they mm-hmm. were, you know, depressed or angry to begin with, or, you know, add drugs and alcohol to that, add, you know, nobody understands me and nobody listens to me because, you know, this, that, not having people to talk to, and then get the wrong people, you know, involved with the wrong people, and then you know, it's a recipe for disaster. But ghosts do that too. The paranormal does that too. And sometimes they play with us like pieces on a chessboard. You know?
Yeah. The lower the vibration, the easier for that stuff to slip in there.
I think so. But Steve's got a great Christmas story too. You know, yeah. I just told the one about my mother giving me the hug at Christmas and watching the Mario Lanza Ave Maria thing with us. She had to be right there, you know, and it's just, you could feel her there. So, you know, I think other people can have those moments too, if they just let go and lift, you know. That's when the good can come and connect, you know, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go ahead and tell that story if you want
it's
me
a good
to.
Good one.
Started again about the time I was around 5 or 6 years old. That seems to be when most of my paranormal experiences started. And in talking to people throughout the last several years, I found that that's when a lot of people first started experiencing things out of the ordinary things. That seems to be a magical age, like between 4 and 8, for most people.
You know what? I don't want to cut you off, but now that you say that, that's my first remembrance when I was very small like that. I saw something super weird at the edge of the wood line. yeah. when I was about that age. So, yeah.
I think you're more open to it as a child. Plus, you haven't been taught to ignore it or taught that it doesn't exist or taught that you didn't really see that or that sort of thing. One of the most interesting, there was two little boys that I used to play with, and then I'll get to the Christmas story, where our house sat. Went down, the backyard went down, and there was seven natural springs on that property that ran into a bigger creek, which ran into the lake that was about 300 yards or so away. Well, on the other side of the creek, the branch, we called that the Bottoms, and that was, parents always had a big garden down there, and the rest of it was not cleared off. It was just in woods and stuff. But when I was playing down there in the Bottoms, a lot of times there was these two little boys that would come out of the woods. And I would just look up and see them coming down the hill out of the woods. And they never did talk. They would play around like I had a rope swing down there or something like that. But they never said anything. And I just assumed that, you know, either they didn't have anything to say or maybe they couldn't talk. I didn't know. And years later, I was in my 30s and I was talking to my dad about that place when we lived down there. And I said, you know, I never did figure out who those two little kids were, who those two little boys were that came out of the woods. That I used to play with. I said, you know, I didn't go to school with them or anything, and that was the only school around there. And he's like, oh, your imaginary friends? And I'm like, no, they weren't imaginary. And he said, you know, we'd be outside doing stuff and see you playing down there, but there was never any kids with you. But, yeah, they would come out of the woods, and so they would just hang around. They wouldn't hang around long, and then I would hear a bell, like what sounded like a dinner bell or something, and they would take back off through the woods, over the hill, and gone. And when I was talking to my dad about that, I explained, you know, where they went to and where they would come from. He said, there's not anything over there. There's not any houses or anything. He said, that just, you go over that hill where our property was, and then it's a real steep drop off down into the lake. And I said, there used to be, there was a church and a graveyard down there before they backed the river up and made the lake, but that's all underwater now. And I got to thinking about that. These little kids, they looked like farm kids. They wore little blue jeans with the cuffs cuffed way up. And the way that worked was when you were a kid, you got a pair of jeans and you might not get another pair for a year or so. So any growing you did, you know, your mom would roll the cuffs down mm-hmm. and make them fit you a little bit better. And they had on real nice looking plaid or flannel shirts. And I got to thinking about that. I think those kids were ghosts, that they were mm-hmm. probably buried in that graveyard down there under the water, and they would come through somehow and play with me. They'd see me down there and come to where I was. And I don't know how the bell worked or what that had to do with anything, but I've heard other people say that a lot of times apparitions or some sort of haunting there will be. Sounds like bells or mm-hmm. something like that.
Did it sound like a little, like one of those little handbells, like the they used on the little rascal to call the dog?
Sound like a dinner bell.
Like a bigger.
But it would only ring a time or two. Bong, bong. And as soon as they heard it, man, they took off through the woods and they were gone.
Mm. I wondered if there was a church there. That used to be a church. I was thinking
that,
it was church
bell.
Well, that's
what he said. It might have been. Because that's what he said, that over that hillside, that's all that was ever over there. There'd been a church and a graveyard, but it was all underwater.
Mm. I just wonder if it was that old church bell.
TVA
I just thought of that.
Back the Clinch River up in, I think, 62 or 63. Might have even been 64. And made Melton Hill Lake there. And a lot of that farmland has been underwater and has been now, you know, 50-something years. So it could have been something at the church. That's underwater, calling them back.
Calling them back. Wow.
I saw them. I played with them on more than one occasion. Not a whole lot, but they'd come out of the woods and they would interact, but they never spoke. And I just thought,
that's what I was just going to ask you, if they would like interact with you or if they were just, doing their own thing.
I mean, they kind of appeared to be doing their own thing, but they were with me. Like if I had a rope swing, I would swing on it, and then they would try it and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Or if I was prowling in the woods, they would be in the woods there with me, and they would come and sit near me and things like that, but never uttered a single word.
Wow.
And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think about stuff like that. You know, hey, why don't you talk, or do you know how to talk? Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. I was a quiet kid, too, so just, you know, that was fine with me.
Same thing with mine, man. I had that the little, she had little red braids, and she wore overalls, a little check shirt. And she was frayed around the collar and the elbow on it, I remember. I mean, she was just, she was clean, but they were old clothes. And I thought she was, lived in the neighborhood, but I didn't find out till after.
Yeah.
My mother never saw her.
That was the strange thing to me, because the only school around there for miles was the one that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I didn't go to school with them.
Yeah. But you think about it now.
10, the other one was probably 7 or 8. The older one was older than me, or appeared to be, and the younger one was probably about my age or just a little bit older at that time, the first time I saw him.
Wow.
But the Christmas story, we had that house built in right after I was born in 63 and 64. And, of course, there'd been a lot of things that had gone on there. Out behind the house, like you talked about, we had a burn pile. We used to burn our garbage. You lived out in the country. That was all you had to do, unless you wanted to haul it into Oak Ridge to the dump or something like that. So we opted to burn it. But where our burn pile used to be, there'd been an old house that sat there at one time. And supposedly the lady that lived there was a witch, and the people around the community were afraid of her. Uh-uh. And so that whole property had eerie stuff there. That was where the thing in the ditch got after me. That ditch had actually been the original road, dirt road through there, dating back to Revolutionary War times. And I think that probably a lot of people over the years, both from the Revolutionary War and the Civil War, stopped to drink out of those springs and got ambushed. It was one time we were burning a big old dead tree that had fallen over, and about halfway through the tree being burned, we found a Civil War era bayonet blade that had been broken off in the tree.
Wow.
And used to find mini balls and stuff down there around the stream, as well as arrowheads. I think there'd been probably a lot of people killed there over the years, ambushed, because where the springs were, there was hills all the way around it, to where you'd have a vantage point. If you were up above it, you could see anybody down there at the water. Yeah.
Yep.
And there was a lot of rocks, a lot of places to hide. It was a good, a fun place to grow up. You know, I had a lot of good times in those woods, and some scary ones too. But in that house, the way it was set up, we had, now this is a thing in the South, we had what was called the good living room. That was the normal living room on the front of the house. That's where, you know, if you had company come over, that's where you stayed, in the good living room. Had nice furniture in there, marble coffee table and stereo and stuff like that. And that was if you came in the front door, that's where you came in. We came in and out the garage door, which was bring you into the kitchen. And we ate in the kitchen, had a kitchen table in there. And there was a bar there, too, that you could eat at, like a breakfast nook. Well, what had originally been the dining room, that was just the regular old living room where the TV was, and had a couple of couches and stuff in there. And I could play in there and do whatever I wanted to do. But the only time I was ever allowed in the good living room was if I wanted to go in there and study, because there was really good lighting in there. I could go in there and either lay on the couch or in the floor, have the stereo on and do my homework. Or in Christmas, at Christmas time, that was where we put the Christmas tree, because there was big picture windows in there that looked out toward the road, even though the road was 212 feet away. And I could go in there and look at the Christmas tree lights as long as I didn't put my feet up on the furniture. That was a big no-no, because like I said, that was where the good furniture and stuff was in there. So I'd go in there and watch the lights on the tree and stuff. And I remember this one particular time, I was probably about four or five. I was laying on the couch, and I had my shoes off so I could put my feet up on it. And I was looking up at the ceiling, watching the lights twinkle on the ceiling, and I caught a little movement up there. What was that? That must just be the lights or something. But then I saw it again. It was this tiny little white feather, just a little gossamer feather, maybe 2 inches long. And it's just floating just around the ceiling. It would move around almost like it was moving under its own power. Now, because I was allergic to everything, we didn't have regular baseboard heat or forced air heat or anything like that. They decided when they built that house, because I had horrible allergies when I was little, still do to an extent, they put in what was new at the time, a new invention called seal heat or ceiling heat. It was where there were rods in the ceiling under behind the sheetrock that radiated heat. So it was always warm up near the top. Well, you know, heat makes things rise up. It would make things
spin
around, or it would push it down toward the floor, if anything. But I laid there and I watched this feather. And then when I was brave, I would get up on the couch and try to catch it. And it would always float just out of my grasp or be just high enough that I couldn't get it. I'd watch it go around the Christmas tree and go around other parts of the room.
Wow.
And stuff, and saw it for years. And once I sat down later and started thinking about it, writing about it, I no longer saw it anymore when I was actually big enough that I could have stood up on something and caught it. I never saw it again after I was, say, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. Well, years later, I'm talking to a guy about paranormal stuff, and he's like, I've got a story I want to tell you. And he told me almost the same exact story, that he would see a feather. Now, I don't think it was just at Christmas time or anything like that, but he would see a feather in his house that he could never catch. And he would see it certain times of year and things, but I don't think his was just at Christmas. Mine was only around the holidays. And sat there and listened to it, and it just absolutely blew my mind because it was my story. But I didn't want to say, oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was, because the way he told it, he said that he thought it was his grandfather. Uh-huh. Because when he was little, his grandfather told him, when I die, I'm going to come back as a feather and watch over you and keep an eye on you.
There you go.
My grandfather had passed away around the holidays when I was 6 months old. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, as far as any promise to come back as a feather or anything, that didn't exist in my experience. But yet there around the holidays, there was a feather, and my grandfather died around that time. So between this guy's story and what I experienced, I kind of put it together. And mm-hmm. I believe that was my grandfather making mm-hmm. contact with me. And he knew that someday, eventually, I'd figure it out and realize that it was him.
Isn't that great?
But I didn't want to ruin the other guy's story. I mean, it was just such a poignant, personal mm-hmm. story.
Me too. That happened to me. It was, you know, he probably took,
like,
away from
crying
him.
When he was telling it to me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened to me too. You know, I didn't want to marginalize his story. I just kept quiet. But it absolutely blew my mind. I mean, almost the same thing. He talked about how it would float around. He'd try to catch it. He never could catch it. Uh-huh. And then just one day, he never saw it anymore.
Wow.
But yeah, I saw that for years, probably from the age of 4 or 5 till, like I said, it was about 10, 11, something like that, when I could have stood on the furniture and get it in. Mm-hmm. God help me, my mom had caught me standing on the furniture. Even in sock feet.
You'd have had to come back in as a feather.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I definitely think that that's one thing. I mean, when you talk to Rob Guttrow, or you talk to, Claire Broad, or, you know, anybody like that's that type of medium that's just so connected into it, they've taken this journey and they've really learned about, you know, ghosts and, you know, the spirits that come back and visit and stuff like that, and they tell you that absolutely they use feathers, absolutely they, and it's not them as, you know, the thing, they're not
coins.
Coming back.
I've heard that coins. When you find coins, that's absolutely somebody that's close to you thinking about you. I find dimes all the time.
Yep.
Find them,
and
in
it
the
might
house,
be the date.
I don't even keep change.
Yeah, it might be a date. It might be, you know, whatever. We've got several of that going on in my family right now currently. I mean, mm-hmm. I've gotten in a locked car, parked my car the day before. No darn well, I didn't have any feathers or boas. I do crafts, and I worked in a craft store, but I didn't. It wasn't like that. There was nothing in my car, and it was locked. And then, you know, had an experience, or, you know, thought about somebody, thought, man, I haven't heard from you, I hope you're okay, or something like that. Got in my car the next day, and there's a white, like you said, gossamer feather, just a beautiful feather. You know, it's not been kicking around outside because it's not dirty, it's not weathered. It's just this beautiful white feather in a locked car on my dashboard, waiting for me right in front of my steering wheel. So yeah. I'd see it. And I've heard many a story from people too, you know, that say the same thing, or it's a cardinal that comes at the right time, or it's like Steve said, coins and things like that. You know, I've got one now,
a certain song that comes on the radio.
Oh yeah,
I'll be thinking of somebody and remember maybe a song that we sang together, or we went and saw the band live or something, mm-hmm. and then turn on the radio and that same song is playing. You know, there's little ways like that. I think mm-hmm. that stuff on the other side can get in touch with you. I think now I don't see any feathers because Mulder likes feathers.
And he'll eat them.
He'll eat it. I have chickens. I have 13 laying hens. And he likes to get out there and eat the little chicken feathers when he finds them.
Oh, my goodness.
If Grandpa comes to visit as a feather, Mulder, he's going to get
it. He's going to eat it.
Mulder will get a hold of him.
That's funny. But they do find lots of ways to send, you know, send you signs. And I think we talk ourselves out of maybe this year, open your mind and your heart, and then maybe not talk yourself out of the little things either.
Because, look for those. I've seen license plates on the car in front of me. Mm-hmm. One time I was worried about something. I don't remember what it was now. It was so inconsequential, but it was bothering me then. And on the license plate in front of me, it had my birth date, 10/31, and the letters okay.
Oh, nice. So
it's just like, okay, I got you.
I had that one time. I said, we just left the house and we were talking about, I'm a big Archangel Michael fan. I just love him. I just think he's a warrior. I've got a real special place in my heart for warriors, you know. And I have no problem calling him down for help. It's like, Mike, we got something. Come on. You know, I mean, that's just how I talk to him. So we were in a thing and I think Mario was teasing me and, you know, or something about, well, do you really think that, you know, there is an Archangel Michael or something like that. And we get in the car and we go and we stop at the red light. The first red light we stop at, the car in front of us, Michael. On the license plate. And I went, sure do, baby. Yep. But see, that's the thing. And we talk ourselves out of it. But I think if you put yourself out there in the universe like that, put, you know, positive waves out there, they can come back. And if you do start to notice them and you do start to acknowledge them, I'll tell you this, they'll come more and more frequent. Because it's just like angel numbers. When you start thinking, you know, 111, you know, you hear about the 1111s and stuff like that as being angel numbers.
I see 1111 twice a day.
If they know you're paying attention, you're getting it, they'll do it more. And that's, I say, would probably be what you would say, your angels, your spirit guides, your, you know, your ancestors, your, you know, whatever you want to call them. And all of those things can be true at the same time. I believe that as well. And they know you're paying attention, so that gives them more energy. They're going to do it more. So, like, if the picture of, you know, that person keeps getting knocked over and you straighten it up, what's going on? Stop for a second and think, is it possible? It might be, you know, and why not?
Yeah.
Why not? It's a message of love and, you know, and around the holidays and, you know, these times and stuff, we need as much love that we can connect into as possible for each other, for friends, whether it be in a live chat or your listeners reaching out and giving comments or, you know, or trying to be extra nice. And I think that's what the holidays are about. That's what they were about when I was a kid. It was about a little more love. Everybody's got a little more pep in their step. Everybody's got a little secret they're trying to keep. Even if it's a little one, a little special something they're doing for somebody, you know. It wasn't about this anxiety of merchandise and materialism and things like that. It was, you know, a simple thing. It was, you know, like there's this movie out, and I believe it's out by Truman Capote, and it was I believe based on experience he had as a child, and he was staying with an aunt who was the crazy one in the family. She was a little eccentric, and she was a little, you know, treated that way by the family. But he found out spending time with her, she was the most special of the entire family because she saw deeper, she loved deeper, she cared more. She went way out of the way, and she had a wonderful outlook on life, and everything was special, from flowers to birds to trees, the old oak she would talk to and had a name for. Just wonderful. And she went around and collected all year to be able to save up and trade and do a little something for this one to get this, to make fruit cakes for everybody she knew. And, you know, had to walk miles to get, you know, the walnuts and go here to trade for the cherries and go here. And it was all about how he appreciated more in life out of that one time. And it was all about her giving everything she had to be able to give back to others. And that was kind of what Christmas was to us. It was maybe doing something special for, you know, for somebody physically, like, you know, painting a room and surprising them, or, you know, fixing those old skates or whatever it may be. Yeah. those kind of things, I think, are coming back into fashion, I hope, because last year we found out material wasn't that important. It was people we were around, and, you know, and I think that our loved ones that have passed are a huge part of that, because I'm hearing, Steve is hearing from our guests, from the people we talk to, from the people that send us stories, from emails, endless, you know, messages and things like that. And we love each and every one of them, but that's what they're telling us, that loved ones are coming back to tell them that they're okay. And, you know, little things like that, too. We can't miss the good in this subject. And I think there's so much miracle, especially at this time. We just got to open our hearts and our minds.
Yeah. I don't have much to say after that, because it's just, you said it all. Perfect.
Yeah. And perfect. This is the time for miracles. So open your hearts to those too. You know, if you want to hear real quick, I'll tell you real quick when you can go out on if you want. But we have a current thing in the family here. There was a man that I had, I can say it now, the pleasure to be married to for the crazy amount of time it was. And we were able to see each other young and then go through our turmoil and come back as old folks and laugh. So we got to have that. You know, it's like, yeah, you were an ass. So were you. Yeah. You know, I would be able to look back. But we also got to see a little bit more of appreciate the person as they were, not, you know, living with them and trying to make that work. It's different, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, he had a motorcycle accident and passed. And multiple ways this man has showed me proof of the other side in many fun ways. But he was a biker, and he was – talk about your Harley riders – and he was in a 1%er gang for a while. I mean, he was a tough old bear. And he didn't mess around. And he came through a medium one night to tell me the guy didn't understand the message. And we were talking about something, and he finished with this. And he said, wait a minute, eat a peach. Eat a peach. He goes, I don't understand that. And I went, I got it. I do. Well, he had told me once when we were married, he wanted, if he was going to go out, he was going to go out like Dwayne Allman. Because I used to have a thing about him being drunk on a motorcycle. Imagine that. And he said, I go out, I'm going out like good old Dwayne. Well, anybody that knows Dwayne Allman, he died in a motorcycle accident, hit the back of a peach truck. Which is why Allman Brothers named the next album, Eat a Peach. So when the medium came through and said, Eat a Peach, I'm like, I got it, babe.
Yeah.
Now, to add to that, my son, his son, just got engaged. And he got to meet her once. And I think at the time he wished he had connected a little bit more, because he didn't realize how serious it was. And then he had to go, you know, a couple thousand miles away again. When he passed, she was wonderful to my son and helped out a lot with the situation and everything, and helped him go through his things and was very supportive. And it's very tough when you lose somebody and all the crap you got to go through. And I think he saw that, because she's finding many a quarter these days with her graduating, the year she graduated high school, on every single one of them. And they're Georgia quarters. Eat a peach.
That's cool.
And that's, it's cool. Yeah, and it's always where she can find it after, you know, his son just left the room or something like that, and turn around, it's on the bed, you know. So it happens, and you can't say that person I knew him in life would never do something like that, because when they get over there, they get it.
Yeah.
And they do. So don't ever nix out and say, well, you know, such and such would never do that. Sometimes they're reaching out because they have to do that one last thing. And you know what I mean? That one last hug, or that one last, I'm sorry, you know, or that one last, I love you, you know, to move up a little more. And then they can come back and do more stuff, I think. So that's it, you know. So think that this Christmas. Try something different. And, you know, you can miss them, but love them, you know. Send them love so they can send the love back.
Yeah, I need to remember that, because it's Christmas time was always so special. And I mean, it It still is. It's Christmas, but ever since my grandparents are gone, it's like mm-hmm. it's like the magic mm-hmm. is gone. Like magic died.
Then bring it back. Exactly. No, then bring it back. If you miss it, bring it back. Even if it's a little bit, you know, find an old recipe they did. Do something for each one of them. Put it on the table. There they are. And yeah. They will be, you know, so.
I'm going to do that this year for sure. There you definitely.
Go. Do something like that. I knew a lady that had, she used the Cricut that you could iron on and mm-hmm. did dish towels for everybody. Looked up an old recipe for the grandmother for apple pie and mm-hmm. had the whole recipe printed out on dish towels and gave them to everybody for Christmas. And I bet you she was there. You know, so yeah. little things like that. It also makes you feel good too. And maybe we'll get some of that old fashioned Christmas back, you know, where we're doing stuff like that for each other, you know, mm-hmm. and really connecting into the heart, you know, instead of buying everything from Amazon and stuff. So
I know. I hope more people get into that. I was just telling my mom the other day, I was asking her if she had any of my great grandmother's handwritten recipes. Mm-hmm. Would have been my dad's grandmother, because I make cutting boards and stuff, and my sister's mm-hmm. fiance's dad has access to not a Cricut, but one of the printer. CNC machines where you can laser it on wood. So I wanted to get her, you know, her old recipe and burn it onto it.
Yep. Oh, it'd be beautiful. Oh, what a great gift. There you go. Run with that. Absolutely.
Yep, for sure.
Your mic's off, Steve. Steve's trying to say something. There you go.
I didn't realize I had it. I needed it to clear my throat. So yeah, that would be around for a long, long time too. That'd be a great heirloom.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful idea.
Members. Yep.
That's a beautiful idea. I highly recommend that to anybody listening too, you know. And if you want, you know, like I said, more stories too. Steve's got some great books out there, you know, everything from Strange Things in the Woods to My Strange World, all the way to all the missing and disappearances. You're doing all kind of sections all around the USA, aren't you, Steve?
Yeah, just turned in book three, which is the Pacific Northwest, covers Oregon, Washington and Idaho. That'll be out mid-December.
And that's missing cases. If you listen to the podcast, you know, I just love the podcast you do about the missing people. But the thing is you don't just do the missing people that, you know, like the 411 stuff. You do all of the different weird, you know, things like people that almost, you know, and came right back. Well, odd stories.
I just recorded an episode today that amazing stories of children that survived, you know, some of them out in the woods, little bitty kids, 2, 3, 4 days, but they made it. So it's not all doom and gloom. There is a lot of that. There's people that are never found.
Well, I'm showing it, but you won't be able to see it.
We are all children in this wilderness.
Describe it in great detail, Steve.
Tour through a haunted life. It took me a year or two to be able to say that without mixing it up.
It's a beautiful cover, guys. It's so cool. It's basically, there's a little story to this. Steve and I were picking the cover. I said, I found it. I said, it's got the black cat. It's got my crow. I have a raven that visits me in the backyard. And it's me as a little girl with all the people around me, behind me, the ghosts that follow me through. And it was perfect. That was creepy in and of itself, because here's some guy in the UK that's doing an album, and he did it before he met me. It was just there. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible.
Every image that you wanted in there to tell part of your story, it was already there and waiting on you.
Yep. I bought it in 15 minutes. I sent him the money. I have to have it. So, you know, it's wonderful. But anyway, Steve and I wrote it together, and, you know, a lot of his good stories.
Mainly Cisco. I have some color commentary. Cisco did the hard lifting on that one.
Mm-hmm. If you want to hear more about the head that came at me with the red eyes and all the stuff in the farmhouse, there's a big old long chapter. It's in the book and all the other different things.
The chapter on Gettysburg is worth the cost of the book alone.
Thank you, darling. Yeah, Gettysburg, special place.
Say the title of the book again, because you guys were kind of talking together at the same time, which is fine. I don't mind. No, but I want people to hear it, and I want them to know where they can
together,
get it.
Say it together, Cisco.
Yeah, there you go. 1, 2, 3. We are all children.
The wilderness of the afterlife.
A guided tour through a haunted life. There you go. And that's on Amazon. You can hook up. You can... Oh, and. come on to the podcast, Journey Through the Gate, Paranormal Portal Podcast on YouTube. And we have a great live chat. Steve's with me on Mondays. Sundays, I have guests in, and the chat is just fantastic. We have great mods and great conversations, and everybody becomes like a family there. And, you know, and not only that, they throw out great questions and great commentary along the way. And the mods are throwing links out there if you're interested in the subject. It's just a great place to come
over there on Monday nights.
It's just a great time, you know. I don't know what we're going to talk about this Monday night. Do you know, Steve?
Always pop in there.
It just pops up.
Hopefully,
man,
we won't make an iceberg fall on anybody this time.
Weird things happen during our podcast, I promise you. This one, too. So, Steve and I always put out a disclaimer. If your picture falls off the wall, or a vase falls off the table, or your couch floats,
collapses on you.
We're not responsible.
And you can find me on 13 Past Midnight every midnight, Eastern Time, for Ghost Stories at Midnight. And also, Missing Persons and Mysteries is the main YouTube channel. Today, we just passed 128,000 subscribers.
Wow.
I'm
fantastic.
Blessed. Thanks to everybody that's subscribed.
Yes. Yes. Thanks, everybody, so much. And thank you for having us on, sweetie.
Yeah, yep. Thank you guys so much. Yep. Appreciate it.
Enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah.
Good couple of good Christmas stories, some good, you know, advice. And like I said, this can be a very scary subject. And, you know, Steve and I have been through some pretty scary things. But right now during Christmas, we need to hear stories of hope. And this has happened. It's happened to us. It can happen to you. But if it doesn't happen to you, don't think that your loved ones aren't okay. They are. Just send them that love energy anyway. And, you know, and the easiest way I find is to also talk to your spirit guides, or however you want to say it, your angels. Talk to all of them. I talk to all of them. I don't ask for names. I just like, look, I need help, you know. But, you know, send that out there and ask them to come into your dreams. Sometimes you can get a visitation dream that way. Like, we're okay, you know, and you're doing fine, you know. So give it a whirl. All right.
Yep. Thanks, guys, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas,
Merry Christmas,
sweetheart.
Happy holidays. Thank
happy
you.
Holidays. Yes. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.